I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MEATEATER for 10% off your purchase. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. You simply pour a can into your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. So pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.
Welcome to the Wired to Hunt Foundations podcast, your guide to the fundamentals of better deer hunting. Presented by First Light, creating proven, versatile hunting apparel for the stand, saddle, or blind. First Light. Go farther, stay longer. And now, your host, Tony Peterson.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Wired to Hunt Foundations podcast, which is brought to you by First Light. I'm your host, Tony Peterson, and today's episode is all about training yourself to think more like a buck. When your job every week, you know, consists of creating content, and you're not a guy like Mark Kenyon who thinks butterflies are the coolest thing ever, and you just lean into that even though the audience couldn't care less about monarchs, you just find inspiration in weird places. I most recently found some of that good stuff after not being able to find one of my dogs in the house. I know that doesn't make any sense, but trust me, it will if you keep on listening. My wife doesn't drink a whole lot, but occasionally she'll tie one on. Recently, while watching the women's Final Four game to see if Caitlin Clark could make 15 or 23 pointers from half court, my bride went pretty deep in her celebratory libations. For my slower listeners, I mean she had three drinks, which is a lot for her. She was so keyed up after that Hawkeyes win and knowing they were going to make it to the championship that she stayed up after I went to bed since I was planning on getting up bright and early to go to Wisconsin to do some deer work. Now, before I went to bed, I let the young dog outside and then I gave my bride specific instructions to let Sadie back in. And then I went back and I gave her specific instructions to let Sadie back in again, which, if you're paying attention, is twice I told her to let Sadie back inside. Well, when I woke up in the morning, it was pretty clear during feeding time that one of my dogs was definitely sleeping in. I checked my daughter's room, where Sadie usually snuggles up, and while I was squinting in the dark, trying not to wake my daughter and see a black dog in the black dark, I realized something. My dog was probably still tied up outside, and I might need to have an intervention with my wife, which would be real ironic given my history. Now that poor little dog was so happy to see me, it was almost worth leaving her outside all night. I'll admit, as a dog lover, my first instinct was to run into the bedroom and wake my wife up to let her know what she had done. I was pissed. But then I thought, well, it's not like I'm batting 1,000 in life, and it's not like I never made any really stupid decisions when I drank. So I did the grown-up thing, and I let her off easy. Plus, I knew she'd feel terrible since she loves that little black lab so much. Now, I got to thinking about Sadie's night tied up in our front yard. I have no doubt she heard some coyotes, because we hear them often. I wondered if any of the neighborhood foxes or deer walked by at some point. I wonder what she smelled throughout the night, sitting there in the dark, wondering why she got stuck with such shitty owners. Now, that got me thinking about a fellow I interviewed a few years ago when I had a podcast dedicated to dogs. The show was about a guy down in Texas who trains dogs to sniff out endangered sea turtle nests so they can help the little turtles hatch and survive the journey into the ocean. Now, that trainer also adopts quite a few dogs, including dogs that are blind or deaf, or in a couple cases, both. Now, I asked him how he trained a blind and deaf dog, and he said, well, with a lot of treats, which makes sense. He also told me about how his blind and deaf dog reacted the first time they visited the beach together. Basically, that dog stuck its snout in the air and started running circles down the beach, obviously enjoying his time in that environment. The crazy thing is that the dog did that because that dog maps out the world just with its nose. In its eternal silence and darkness, the best way to interact with the world is with its sniffer. And on a beach, it quickly knew that nothing was blocking the wind for miles, which in its head meant it wasn't going to run into anything. Now, there's something pure about a dog just running because it wants to run, but also a blind and deaf dog getting to run freely because it figured out it's in a safe place to run freely. The trainer and I talked about this, and he basically said he can watch that dog avoid trees and plants and cars and garbage cans and whatever else because it travels with the wind at its face if it at all can. Now imagine that. It's pretty hard for us to relate, but think about if your nose provided as much intel about the world as your eyes do. That's the way it is for dogs, and you guessed it, giraffes. Just kidding. Well, technically, I have no idea how good giraffe noses are, but it doesn't matter because I'm talking about deer here. I think this is something to acknowledge, and it's something to try to understand. In fact, I think at least thinking about how deer map their world with their noses and how they see the world is something that can help you level up as a deer hunter. What they hear, you know, that matters too, but it's pretty easy to figure out how to be quiet, so I'm not going to dwell on that one. So let's start with something blatantly obvious. We can't even grasp what it's like to be able to interpret the world the way deer do. We have to make a guess, we have to fill in the blanks, and just kind of roll with it. But how well you do that matters, and it's something I think we can all benefit from. Let me give you an example. The morning I figured out that my wife had basically tortured my poor, scared dog all night long by leaving her outside to fend for herself in the mean streets of the suburbs, I drove to Wisconsin. The goal was to cut a trail on a property, scout out some trees for bow stands and rifle stands, and if I had the time, put up a stand or a blind. One thing that happens to saw blades around me is that they get real dull. This happens over there a lot because, you know, you'll be happily zoned out swinging that brush cutter around when the blade will whack into a rock and send a shower of sparks. When you do this enough, your sweet tree-cutting saw blade turns into mostly a giant pizza cutter. When that happened, I ran to town to buy a new blade, but they were sold out. That gave me a chance to carry a stand into a spot I set up a few weeks ago and get ahead of the game a little bit. When I was up there in that tree, you know, covering my hands in sap and setting the stand in just such a way so that I won't even have to stand up to shoot a mature buck when he cruises through the big woods this fall, I realized the wind was blowing straight out of the west. That direction in that spot means any buck walking into it along the slight elevation line I talked about a few weeks ago will think he's good. He'll think that the danger in front of him is going to be discovered via his nose long before he gets into the red zone. This only gets a little better because the elevation line doesn't sit on a perfectly east-west line. It comes in slightly from the north, which means the bucks traveling it will actually be giving me an even better edge, and they'll believe they are safe. When that stuff comes together, the kind of stuff that makes big bucks believe they have the upper hand when they don't, you have the makings for an amazing spot. Now here's where things get a little wonky. When I was running a camera in that spot for the last few years, or grouse hunting it last fall, or walking it out this winter while scouting, I wasn't thinking about what bucks think about. I was thinking about what a hunter who wants to kill bucks thinks about. You know, things like, man, there's a sweet rub there and a sweet rub there, and since my camera's over there and shows me this travel, I just need to pick a good tree and the rest is history. Yet we do that a lot, and a lot of times we don't kill big bucks. I think this is because we don't put ourselves in their shoes, so to speak.
Now, a lot of you guys are familiar with the old hunting tradition of eating, you know, some organ, the heart or a chunk of liver off the first animal you kill. I had that when I was a little kid and it was a big deal. Organ meats were always prized by frontier people who knew the importance of getting a lot of different minerals and nutrients. And as often is the case, those guys were onto something because organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. And you can get the same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil made exclusively from regeneratively raised, grass-fed, and finished cattle. Heart and Soil's unique freeze-drying process means all those important nutrients are trapped in, ensuring you experience every one of the benefits of nature's superfood in a clean, convenient, taste-free capsule. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And make sure to use code MEATEATER for 10% off your purchase. That's heartandsoil.co. Use the code MEATEATER.
We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go. But here's one product that stood the test of time. Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. And it's really simple. When you pour it into your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff, like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it do its job. Now, you probably know someone who's used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again, because people everywhere rely on it to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should the entire season. So, help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
We don't think about how walking through the woods for them is a matter of life and death. Now, I realize at any given moment, you or I could be strolling down the sidewalk listening to German death metal on our earbuds when a bus could veer off course and pancake us right into the side of a Quick Trip. But we don't fear that kind of thing a whole lot. You know, we know it's possible, but not very likely. A big buck walking through the woods knows that he could run into a hunter, two-legged or four, and that when he does, it's highly likely his life is in danger. What probably reinforces this a hell of a lot is that he can also smell when predators have been through in the last few days. The entire world of scent is a matrix of animals and plants coming together in his environment. For him to travel a certain elevation line, at least a lot of the time, he's going to want to do it when his nose could save his ass. It's actually pretty simple, and while I realize they don't always follow the rules, especially when it's the rut, I believe they follow those rules a lot. I think they're far more aware of us than we'd like to believe. And a way to bridge this gap is to try to think like a deer. Now, I know this probably sounds a little crazy, but hear me out. Nature is on a survival mission, and there are two ways creatures survive. One is the obvious way, which is that they don't die if they can help it. The other is by passing on their genes, so that even when they are dead and gone, some part of them is still out there on the landscape giving a new generation of hunters hope. We don't think about our own survival a whole lot because we don't have to. We have the luxury of not fretting over getting killed at any given moment. We don't have to look at the woods as a source of total danger, but instead a source of enjoyment. What we hunt doesn't have that same luxury, and it matters how you think about that. Take bed hunters like Dan Infault, for example. A guy like that isn't just trying to figure out where a big buck beds on a high spot in a swamp. He's trying to figure out why. On the surface level, I guess we could say every big buck bed is in a spot where big bucks think they are safe. But that only works if you ignore all of the other conditions. That big buck bed on the edge of a swamp in Louisiana or Georgia might be ideal for some type of south wind. But what if a cold front blows in and the wind switches to the north? Is the bed still as valuable? Probably not. You see, when we think of wind and conditions, we think about how favorable they'll be to us. We have stands that are ideal for south winds or west winds or whatever. But what does that mean to the deer? It might mean they have to give up some degree of danger detection to travel to or through your spot. And that means that some big old mature deer just aren't going to go there. The risk-reward is out of whack for them. So while we know it's best for us, that doesn't really matter. Imagine their thinking on this. However, you know, whatever level they can reason to, I guess, they know they want to go somewhere to drink or fill their belly or sniff a doe's butt. That's great. But they know getting there is the real battle. And if they can't map the unseen world in front of them with their noses, some deer aren't going to make that move in daylight because it's just not worth it. They also know that if they can use their nose first, they will. Instead of poking their head out into a wide open field, they'll most likely scent check it from the safety of the cover first. When hunters understand this part of the game, they really start to understand how to use it against deer. This is part common sense and actually part visualization. Take a random rub in the woods, for example. Let's say you stumble across it while running and gunning for turkeys. It's a cool find and you drop a waypoint before moving on, because after all, waypoints are free and that's something you want to remember. But what's better than doing just that is to stop and take a long look around. An actual 360 degree view. You know which way the buck was standing by the way he rubbed the tree. So you can place him there in your mind. Now ask yourself, where did he come from? Ask yourself, where's he likely going? If he traveled to this tree in the same direction he made the rub, what wind would have been best for him to make that move? Why would a buck think he was safe to do that, especially if you believe he did it in the daylight? Where else did he leave clues for you? What does it all mean in the grand scheme of things? And by that I mean, what other info do you have about the area and potentially that buck? Did you get any trail camera images of a big one around there last year? When? Did you find a big old bed on a bench 100 yards away? Did you get down into that bed and take a long look around? Can you see the rub from the bed or not? Where is the nearest destination food source? And how would a buck go from there to that bed? Why does he feel safe there? And how can you make him unsafe without letting him know you're onto him? I know I'm throwing a lot of stuff your way, but there's something I want to highlight here. If you think about what a buck might be thinking about, you start to be able to predict when he might move and where. You'll mostly get it wrong, but this is a learning process, and that's okay. The best hunters are built upon a foundation of countless mistakes, thousands of them, if you stick with this stuff long enough. But over time, you start to realize why bucks choose the beds and the trails and the staging areas they do. They're not random. They're their best spots for survival. That's it. This is something that is largely subdued with low-pressure deer, which is why they are just so much easier to hunt. The more pressure the deer get, the more likely they are to make their daily decisions around not taking unnecessary risks. By the way, old does are masters of this too. If you can figure out a way to consistently get in range of old does, especially old does with fawns, you can figure out a way to get around mature bucks. We don't talk about that aspect enough, but I believe it in my heart. Outwitting old deer is outwitting old deer, whether they have antlers or not. Think about this as you're out there, you know, maybe wrapping up your winter and spring scouting efforts, or more likely, poking around the woods trying to shoot a gobbler. The tracks you find in the mud that show a big deer walk through last night. they offer you a chance to think about the why of it all. You know, the buttonhead crew of bucks leaving the alfalfa and jumping a fence to go into the woods while you stare at some turkey decoys, they're telling you a lot too. Ask yourself which way the wind is blowing. Ask yourself, why would they cross there and not somewhere else? Where are they going? Where will they go when they get up to leave their beds later in the day? What are they thinking about? I know that seems dumb. You know, mostly because it's easier for us to think about them subconsciously making decisions and not deliberating on the pros and cons of jumping the fence where it sags or slipping between the strands in a different spot. We just think they don't think like us, which is probably true. But even if they aren't devoting tons of mental horsepower to making the best decisions given any set of circumstances, they are operating off of a base-level risk-reward thought process. They know when they bed with a deadfall to their back that no coyotes are going to sneak up too close from that direction. Just as they know when they bed on a ridge, they can see down into the valley where danger is likely to approach from. Since we know they know that, we can use it to our advantage by just trying to get inside their heads as much as we can. As I get older and try to keep hunting new places and find new experiences out there in the whitetail world, I think about this stuff a lot. It's something that comes from a lot of scouting, and it's something that shapes my season-long plans. It's also probably the biggest contributor to us trusting our instincts, which is the only way we might ever get on the level of a mature buck. So do this. And come back next week because I'm going to talk about why we all need to get outside and touch a little grass. That's it for this week. I'm Tony Peterson. This has been the Wired to Hunt Foundations podcast, which is brought to you by First Light. As always, thank you so much for listening and for all your support. All of us here at Meat Eater, we truly, truly appreciate it. So thank you for that. Maybe you want a little more turkey hunting content. Maybe you want some other deer hunting content. Maybe you just want to listen to one of Clay's podcasts. Whatever. Head on over to themeateater.com. You're going to find tons of articles, tons of videos, tons of podcasts. You know, maybe you need a recipe, whatever. It's all there, themeateater.com.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MEATEATER for 10% off your purchase.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. You simply pour a can into your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. So pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.